Welcome to Rocket Ship, the home of epic React Native content. I'm Simon Grimm, creator of Galaxies.dev, and today's guest is Gary Togman from New York City, CEO at Kendall Finance, a super interesting app we're going to talk about, and also design engineer, and I quote Gary on this, which is a fancy way of saying I like doing both. So welcome, Gary.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
I invited you because you have a pretty interesting app going on with Kendall Finance. You are using React Native for that app, but you are also you're open sourcing a lot of the packages that you're building. And you have a strong background in native iOS development, which I think is really beneficial. React Native is cross-platform and everything's great, but once in a while you have to go deeper into, and then at least understanding one platform makes sense. So I would like to start there. So you started with iOS development, I guess. How did you become a mobile developer?
Yeah, so I'm going to date myself a little bit, but I started iOS development back in 2012. So I was finishing my senior year of high school.
Oh, nice.
And back then, the only way you could develop an iOS app was with Objective-C. So
Good old days.
Was super into having an iPod, and I got my first iPhone. My curiosity essentially just led me down to, like, how could I make my own app? So I went to Barnes & Noble, which is a bookstore chain in the U.S., and I bought a Big Nerd Ranch book, and back then it was on Objective-C, and I kind of went through page by page and learned how to build the app myself. And this is like the first version of being a self-developer before like the YouTube days. And then 2014, like my world kind of changed. Swift was announced at WWDC, and that kind of was this leveled out iOS development. Everybody kind of started from square one, and it was like super exciting.
Yeah,
this brand new language. I get to start with all these other people that started iOS development like 5-6 years ago. We all kind of started from square one. And from there, I went to school for computer science. I really enjoyed it. Got my first job in Boston working at a creative agency, which gave me the ability to work on a bunch of different apps, like in the studio, which is like really fun. I worked at DraftKings, which is a big app here in the US. Wags, which is this pet app. And later on, this company called TrueMotion, which was building interesting iOS SDKs that would track your driving behavior. And this is like an interesting problem, because how do you know if somebody's driving? They could be on an Uber, they could be on a bus, they could be on a bike. So we used all the phone sensors and machine learning to determine if somebody was driving a car, and we sold that to insurance companies ultimately so they could tell if you were a safe driver. There I met one of my best friends, Liam, my co-founder of my company today. And really for up until, I'd say a year and a half ago, I was a native iOS developer, kind of designed a little bit, and now made my way into the React Native world, and I'm enjoying it.
That's great. I mean, I definitely don't blame you for. I told Gary up front that I'm kind of jealous because I really like Swift. I don't really miss Objective-C. Like, there were too many brackets all the time, but Swift was really beautiful and it still is beautiful. And from every now and then, I check out what's going on with Swift UI, and I think they're making progress on different areas. I think they're kind of like everyone's inspiring the other. Like React Native is probably inspiring Swift as well. Swift is inspiring React Native and even Flutter, but I've seen some helpful stuff every now and then. So you've been a native iOS developer all the time. And usually that's a safe path also in the career. Like iOS developers get paid a fair amount of money. So what made you like transition into React Native? What was your road to React Native 2 years ago?
Yeah, so what ended up happening after COVID was the startup I was at, TrueMotion, the company that tracked your driving behavior and built this SDK, ended up being acquired by a bigger company. There's like this merger of these two companies building the same thing in Boston. An MIT-based company acquired it. And I didn't have an incentive, and my co-founder left a little bit before that. We didn't have an incentive really to stay there anymore. We didn't really enjoy what we were doing. So we had the runway to kind of explore our interests now, post-acquisition. So we were traveling together. We were basically builders. He has a similar background where he won the WWDC scholarship back in 2017, I think. He learned to code at a very young age. So like we were really builders at heart, I would describe us. ourselves as. And we were coming up with ideas for things to work on, just indie apps. And we stumbled on creating a personal finance app. What frustrated us with the current personal finance apps that are on the App Store is the fact, well, first, why? Our money was kind of spread between 10 different apps. I had this folder on my iPhone that just said finance, and it had 10 different apps that basically were all just little features and basically did all the same thing. So we were like, can we build something better than Mint just to give us real-time monitoring on our transactions, reports, and analytics, and like all these things? So that was like this idea that we had. And then we thought to ourselves, it'd be interesting if we could build this in one language. Like, we were both native developers, but we knew we needed to build a backend to interface with banks. We didn't really know how to like do that. And we knew about this technology called, or this language called JavaScript. And we knew that there was this framework called React Native that had this promise of creating a cross-platform app. So the first version of this app, which later became my company, Candle, we began building in React Native. And it was an interesting journey. It allowed us to kind of explore the world of TypeScript and JavaScript. We got an MVP out, an app that worked on iOS and Android. And it was kind of this proof of concept that maybe this is a serious framework where we can pursue and use to build like an actual company, which ended up happening later down the road.
I mean, that's super interesting that you didn't say, I will just stick to Swift. I can deliver the best result. Because I know a lot of indie makers also say most money is made on iOS. So like, if you do native iOS development, that's cool. You don't really need React Native. I don't know. Do you get the same vibes now after your app is live on Android as well?
Yeah, well, first thing, so our app today connects to all your banks in the most private way possible. That is kind of like our big differentiator between the competitors. And the other thing, with connections we built ourselves, we're like very proud of that. We don't use any provider for that, which is very interesting. And I can go into how it's private too, because that's very technical too. And like the other side of our business is opening up these connections to developers so they can build extensions and automations on top of their existing accounts. That is like the second act of Candle. And we really see this as the web browser lets you explore the internet and developers can build extensions. We see Candle as the browser for your finances, and we want to enable developers to build extensions and automations in the easiest way possible on top of their existing financial accounts. And to answer your question, I had the thought, like, maybe we should just write this in Swift. The big thing that really pushed us over the edge is the fact that we could share models and use the same language on the back end. I feel like that was the main value prop. We weren't necessarily thinking about Android 100%, although that was like a cool way to get it for free, essentially. The big value out of React Native and just TypeScript to us was the fact that we could share models and algorithms between the back end and the front end. And I know Swift has like Swift on the server, and there's also, they have a vibrant ecosystem, right? So it's very easy for us to go down that route, but we didn't really trust the whole server aspect of Swift. Back then, Vapor was just like a few years old, and Node and JavaScript kind of felt like they were more tried and tested. So that's kind of why we decided to go down that path and why we're still on that path today.
So let's talk a quick about the technology stack of your application. You said you're using JavaScript in all the places. So what is your backend made of?
Yeah, so I'm on the design side, but I can speak to the backend at a high level. The backend, we use SST, which is this way to deploy to AWS. So everything's on AWS as far as our backend goes. It's very lean. There's not a lot of endpoints that we have, and that's by design. We basically use TypeScript and JavaScript as this view model layer for the app, and the model layer also to share models from iOS and Android with the backend.
I've seen SST a few times. I think the creator is pretty popular on Twitter or YouTube.
Yes.
Is his name Red or Dex?
Dex.
He had some pretty I still remember he has one epic YouTube video which really got me, where he was talking to the creator of like SvelteKit, to Rich Harris, and like they were mocking each other so hard, and it was just hilarious. We're like between two ferns, but just with tech nerds. It's amazing. I'm gonna put this in the show note if I can find this. But I honestly never completely got what SST is about. Is it just about like, deploy your Next.js thing to AWS? Because as I know, this seems to be a pretty hard task.
Yeah, I mean, I was, again, speak high level to it, but it essentially allows us to define our backend schema in TypeScript or JavaScript, and with like a simple CLI command, deploy it straight to AWS without having to deal with all these configs. And we just define everything in TypeScript. So that's like their primary cell. And they have this like really nice console. So how we look at, say, websites and Inspector in this console, they kind of have that for the back end as well. So that's like their big value prop, I'd say. But those guys are great. In their Discord, and I follow them both on Twitter. Like, very opinionated guys, very interesting takes from both of them. But it's they keep it interesting. And yeah, I guess that's what makes them special, is because they're super opinionated.
Right, right. You got to stand out in the market
exactly.
These days. Okay, so let's switch to the front end then, because you're probably more familiar with the React Native application. So what's the technology stack here? Is it pretty straightforward, Explore application, REST API, or are you fancy with tRPC? What's going on under the hood of Kendall?
Yeah, so we don't use tRPC. We ended up creating our own kind of tRPC layer. We call it Verdad, which means truth in Spanish. My co-founder actually lives in Mexico City, so he knows Spanish. And it's not great, like, we probably should use something like that, or we looked at another package called Fern, which is trying to bridge that gap as well. But speaking on the client side and pushing back end off for a bit, no, we don't use Expo. So this is just a vanilla React Native framework. We're on the latest version, whatever, 75 point whatever at this point in time. We have a SDK called Kit, which is a wrapper around many UI controls, UIKit controls that we've ported, and the equivalents for Android. And I'd say that powers probably 50%, maybe 60 or 70% of our UI layer. We haven't open sourced this, but if you download our app, it's on the App Store today. What you notice is that your first reaction might feel like it's not a React Native app. We've got this comment for everybody. Nobody believes that we're using React Native because it has this connotation right there, or like this, like, I don't know if you saw the meme earlier this week of a Tesla pulling a semi-truck. Like, people just think like React Native apps are just like so slow and unperformant and ugly. And people do not believe that we use React Native, which is hilarious. They think we're using Swift UI because there are like some rough edges of our app and there are some like performance things, but they're like, maybe that's Swift UI. There's no shot you guys are using React Native. But vanilla JavaScript, we try to keep it very lean. And this is like the thing I would hope folks take away from your podcast, is like, don't use many dependencies. If you want a fast and performance React Native app that feels native, try to lean on like the native sides. Really why we are developing this is because there's this whole native aspect. It allows us to use UIKit and the equivalent on Android to make the app feel just like an app that Apple designed, for example. So no Expo, no like complex overhead on top of our React Native app, just vanilla React Native. And yeah, that's basically it. And our library called Kit, which bridges components from both sides. And we have some open source ones as well that we kind of opened up to the community.
Right. So this is interesting because I think most people I talked to so far, I think like 95, maybe 98% are now sold on Expo. So you're really like, but you also, as you said, like you're not using tRPC, but something you develop your own. You have your own kit. I feel like you just try to be adventurous and don't like to use the proven path. So is Kit also replacing something like React Navigation? Is it handling all of those view transitions, or what is it really doing? I'm fascinated by this. I'm looking forward to seeing this open source.
Yeah, it's basically a port. If you can imagine like the segmented control, the UI menu, all these native UI components, even some buttons, we've kind of ported from UIKit that are missing in React Native, because React Native and just React in general kind of is built on this principle and mind you, I kind of learned this world 2 years ago, so I could be wrong here, there's just some powerful primitives. They kind of added a handful of things, but not everything. And then it's up to the community to kind of build around that. So Kit is a closed source today, but it has a lot of these native components that power Candle today. If you download it on iOS, you'll see. And yeah, we just really wanted it to feel native and, like I said, polished and kind of surprise people to, when they learned that it was built in React Native. So that's the big thing. But we do use a few like packages I should mention. Software Mansion, like they have their animation library, obviously, that powers a lot of our animations in the app. What else? You know, we use React Native screens to talk about navigation. I don't like love it. And React Navigation, I don't love that stack. I feel like it's very complex. There's a lot of overhead, but it's the best thing that we have today. And I'm not about to go down the rabbit hole of writing my own navigation library at this point in time. I just have too many problems, things to solve on the startup side that we can't go down that path. But yeah, it's mostly just UI controls. And there's like so many of them for me to list. There's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you could, by the way, you could use Expo Router. I feel like that's even easier, but the app works. Don't touch it, especially if you're a startup. Apparently, I couldn't download the app because I think it's only available in the United States at this point, other countries, probably.
Unfortunately, we'll try to open it up before this podcast, but yeah, today.
I don't know, maybe I could get it on Android. I don't know if they're as restrictive as well. I don't know, but I can see the screens, and yeah, a lot of this definitely looks very, very native. And I heard this before. I think when I talked to Brendan in a previous episode, he was also thinking about doing like a library to map the gap between React Native and a lot of iOS components, and even like color themes, specific colors, primary colors, or things that are in the iOS or Apple design guidelines. So do you want to extend this library, or do you want to keep this like only focus on your use case?
It depends. Like if we have the bandwidth, we're very early in our journey today as a company, and we really need to like kind of excel and get to like the next round of being a startup. So I'm sure as we do, we'll open source this and like have somebody else that ports most of UIKit. I really think there could be a startup around that. Some developers listening to this, if you do this, all of the UIKit controls and the equivalents on Android, React Native is really missing so many of like the nice things that native iOS developers get without even thinking about them. They just import UIKit and use any UI viewer in Swift UI. It's just like use it in a second. But yeah, I don't know. It's gonna be interesting to see where we go. We'll obviously open source it at some point, just because that's kind of my nature, and we use so many open source packages, so it just makes sense for us to just give back to the community.
Yeah, I would love to get into a few of these packages in a minute. I just had one other topic I really wanted to get your opinion on, because I think I looked at your screenshots and you share some clips on Twitter or X from time to time about the app, and it looks really polished and like they're cool animations. So if people are developing apps in 2024, I feel like, I mean, you can't put out some random shit anymore. Some MVP, it's just not working. But even in your case, I think your app kind of lives from features, from automation, like connecting my accounts and like all these features. But how many animations and cool things do apps need today, like effects and transitions and like just stuff going on that developers tend to leave out if they're short on time?
Yeah, this is hard. And I'd say like the short answer is like, depends on like where you're on your journey. If you're a startup that's raised a lot of capital and can afford to have like the level of polish that Cash App has, for example, or Robinhood, yes, you can like invest in that. But if you're early on and you're just building an MVP, you don't really need any of those fancy animations. You should really focus on the core functionality and try to use everything UIKit gives you out of the box as much as you can, because I know that's still difficult in many ways in React Native, but it's getting easier. And this is like what I would say is like, I oscillate honestly, whether we're going to be a React Native app forever, or if like one day when we get farther in our journey as a company where we'd switch back to the native side. And it really comes back to the animations when you want and fine grained control over navigation and concurrency. So I'd say three things that really bug me about React Native, and I'm happy to go into that.
Please
steer the conversation there if you'd like. But yeah, those are the three things. So as like I mentioned, I learned this framework kind of like a year and a half ago, prior to being an iOS developer, and I use CocoaPods a lot, and I Xcode a lot. So I really kind of, it clicked for me pretty quickly, and I was able to pick it up. Java, TypeScript is very similar to Swift if you squint, like honestly.
Yeah.
I feel like they're very similar in many ways. But I'd say the three things that still bug me about React Native that I don't know like if they're going to be solvable, you know, more about this ecosystem more than I do. But the one I would start is the biggest is concurrency. So on iOS, it's very easy to spin up a new thread or an operation queue and just put some complex algorithm or complex request or complex background operation and forget about it. Then when it comes back, you update the UI. Like, it's so easy to do this, and it takes advantage of all of iOS, essentially, having access to all these cores and all these threads, this thread pool that exists, and just makes running long operations that can freeze the UI or freeze the two threads that we have in React Native, like, not a thing. So I really miss that. I feel like that needs to somehow make its way to React Native land. And I don't know, yeah.
Is there like no equivalent in React Native? I was thinking about, I mean, I just like the other week someone emailed me, hey, I have this app and I need to do this long operation. What should I do? And I just emailed him back, don't do it in the front end. but of course, that's... if you can, like, if there's a Swift way to put it off, it should be available to React Native.
Exactly. That's like a big gripe. I know like there's ways to even spin up like another JavaScript thread, but like going down that rabbit hole is just like another hack on top of a hack. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like we really need to take advantage of dispatch queue and like this thread pool that we get on iOS for us truly to be able to create performant apps, because I'm sure you've experienced frame drops before or the app freezing when it's doing like a lot of work. And it's just one of the most frustrating things ever, because I just think to myself, it's like, oh, this is like solved, but I'm like, dealing with this because we decided to use this framework, and it really bugs me. The other thing I'd say, the second thing, is fine-tune control over navigation and presentation. And this comes back to transitions too. On iOS, it's very easy to just access the navigation controller or the view controller that you're in and just present another view controller, or even go lower level to the UI presentation controller and an animating protocol that lets you create custom transitions very seamlessly. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying you need this today, like as a startup, but later down the road, like when you want to have really nice transitions and your app to stand out, I think of Pinterest with like their waterfall layout. And when you click one of the cells, it kind of beautifully expands. Netflix has this as well. And then you can drag it to put it back in its place. It's just that level of polish. I don't know if that is achievable today.
I've seen this before. It feels so native. I think this is one of the things. You kind of can do this with React Native, Reanimated, and gesture handlers, but like the whole code for this is really long. And I feel like I assume in Swift it's a lot easier to have like shared element transition or pull it back, like closing the Instagram stories to that small bubble.
Right. It's easier on Swift UI. I'd say it's like really seamless on Swift UI and UIKit. There's still a lot of complexity and overhead. Kind of need to interface with this crazy protocol. I'm not even going to try to give you the name of it because it's like insanely long. But yeah, so that's like the second thing. I'd say the third thing really comes down to like API support. Like iOS, they might launch this new framework. Like recently they launched this framework called FinanceKit. Or activities or any other extension that you want to add to your app. Like, you immediately need to think to yourself, like, how do I essentially port this to React Native so I could use it? And in just the native world, you just import this package or you add another target to your project and it's done. So like that complexity really bothers me about React Native too. And I don't know how to solve that part of it. I think that still requires a lot of developers like myself to open source things that solve our problem and kind of contribute to this community. But that would be, oh, Lastly, I'll talk about CocoaPods. I hate CocoaPods with a passion. I want them to like burn in hell. And I think SPM is just like so great. And I do miss that. Like it's integrated into Xcode. It just works. It's so fast. You don't have to run pod install and like all these like weird commands. And I know Expo solves like some of that, but still it's like a like foundational to React Native. Not to mention the Objective-C runtime stuff too. I can go on a tangent on that. But yeah, I'd say I'd have to boil it down to those three things that keep me like oscillating from React Native is great to why are we using React Native?
Okay, so you're on a 3.5 out of 5 recommending React Native.
Yeah, I'd say for early stage startups, definitely. It's like the fastest way to build, iterate. You get this like awesome community like yourself and like others that I've met. I met Fernando. He actually lives in New York as well. He's a huge contributor to the community. I really enjoy the community a lot, and I feel like, I don't know, React Native has so much potential, but it's still like very early and there's still a lot of pain points that we need to overcome as well.
I think this is really great and super interesting because when most people, I talk with a lot of people from the React Native world, and I mean, deep down, we all know that it's always like a compromise between Android and React Native because you have one code base and you just write it once. But yeah, there are performance problems. The bridge has always been a problem. But directly seeing and hearing about these issues from you as a Swift developer, I think this is really great. I don't think I have thought about these before, especially concurrency. I thought like we have background tests and everything's fine, but I wasn't aware that there's some really deep down Swift thing that would be way better for that. In terms of navigation presentation, yeah, I always felt there could be something better, but at the same time, I felt comfortable with the tools we have right now. And the API support, I honestly thought that would work actually better because ultimately, I'm now also speaking about like Expo projects, you can always drop down into Xcode and like add a target or you've seen the examples of React Native running on the Vision OS. So I wonder why we can't access stuff like Apple Finance Kit in, like very soon after its release.
Yeah. Expo is doing a lot of great work too. We just decided it wasn't a fit for us. I'd say like their target market, if I had to describe this, and I know I'm probably wrong here, but to me at least, it seems like they help web developers transition and make mobile applications. Someone coming from a native background, like to me, just seemed like a little bit more overhead. But I do like love what they're building. I love like their snacks. I love how they're innovating with navigation. I think Evan is like really cool in the community and is kind of spearheading that React Native forward a lot as well. But yeah, the API support thing is very annoying. And I guess we can talk about some of the open source packages we released because this kind of comes full circle now. So like little things, say if you wanted to, we recently released this package called Faster Image.
Right, this is probably your most popular package so far?
I'd say so. And it was funny that it's like getting, like there's already like 5 issues on it. And we got so many people asking for different features and stuff. It's like so crazy that like image loading is still like not a solved problem in React Native. And it's because like we all depend on this like ancient library. If you don't use Expo, I know they have something different called React Native Fast Image. Which is this wrapper on top of SD Web Image and I think Glide on Android. But it hasn't been maintained in like 2 years. So like sometimes like it just randomly crashes or runs out of memory. Like weird like, quirks that I've experienced myself. And I'm just like, God, there needs to be something better with this. So I kind of like, looked, I'm like, what is like the status quo of image loading on iOS today? And I found this package called Nuke. The maintainer of it is very smart and built this amazing open source package to load images on iOS. And then I found an equivalent on the Android side, this package called Coil, and I kind of merged both of those and released this package. And yeah, it ended up somewhat blowing up because people have felt the pain of fast image crashing on them or just not being very, I don't know, I guess just not maintained is like the way I put it.
Yeah, I was just looking at it. So at the time recording, it's at 312 stars, which is awesome. I think you just announced it like 1 or 2 weeks ago. And I think, yeah, if it's like an easy drop-in replacement for anything people have used before, then people are immediately sold if it solves the problem. And I assume that faster image view from the code implementation, it looks like I could immediately start using this in my project, right? Yeah. So this is the first one, and I highly recommend it directly, instantly to everyone listening. If you want a better image component, check out Faster Image. It's under @KendallFinance. And @KendallFinance, we're going to find more great stuff. So let's check out what's the second one. The second one is actually the blur view. The blur view is also one of, you could probably add that to your list of three things you hate about React Native. So
yeah.
Why did you come up with another blur view?
So it's the same story. It's just like, I think the existing one that for React Native is just unmaintained, or there's just like 10 different copies of it. So it's really difficult to know like which one actually works. I'd say on the Android side, this is like a bigger problem, just because like there really isn't like a very elegant way or good way or soft way to actually have blurs. So I think even that package needs a little bit of work, but for the iOS side, it's actually been like great. On Android, I think it works still, but there could be performance overhead that you might experience. I'd have to, that's like one of our less maintained packages that I created like super early on, but on iOS, it works super well.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the demonstration. It looks really cool. It's using React Native Reanimated, so that's probably a pure dependency then. But that shouldn't be a problem today, and it looks really, really smooth. I would just love to use it right away as well. and honestly, I love it. The only problem I have with these packages is that like they're generic packages, let's say React Native Screens, which is maintained by Software Mention or CallStack. I sometimes can't distinguish. But then we got like these super specific packages like Faster Image or Blur View. And I wonder sometimes what's going to happen in 3, 4, 5 years. You said it as well. Kendall Finance might go to iOS. You might stop caring about React Native. And we end up with this unmaintained package. So in 5 years, I talk with another Gary who's saying, oh, I tried to use this Faster Image and it didn't work. I don't know. It's hard to like maintain these packages for a longer duration. I think this is what Expo is trying with a lot of packages.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have any point of view on this.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point. Like we're a startup, right? We could die tomorrow. So yeah, there's definitely, I mean, I guess it depends like, yeah, how popular they get, and maybe hopefully the community kind of decides the winners, and a few of them merge and maintain new features and updates and such. But yeah, it's a hard one hard problem to solve like in the React Native community, because it's so like the whole foundation is just open source and just like community members kind of coming together and contributing, whether that's to React Native directly, which I know even with their team they kind of shrunk a bit too. They weren't necessarily as big as they were back 5 years ago when React Native was like actually a viable solution for Facebook or Meta. And I know Meta kind of transitions its way into using Native more and more now versus making the investment in React Native, which is crazy too. So like it begs the question, like, could there be a new React Native in the future? Could like somebody, I saw like this interesting package recently called skip.tools, where I don't know exactly how it works. It was very interesting. But somehow his claim is that you can write Swift UI, and that kind of transpiles into Kotlin somehow. So you use Swift UI and you get Android, which is like the big selling point of React Native. So like there's other solutions as well. So like to just like answer your first question, like who knows what's going to happen in 5 years? We all could be onto like a whole different thing, or we could still be in React Native because React is just so damn popular. And it's hard. It's a hard question to solve. Hopefully the community kind of figures that out. But yeah, the maintainability aspect of React Native is a difficult problem.
Yeah, I mean, the React Native community is probably one of the best. Just look at what, like, the involvement of the big companies of Meta, of Microsoft, of Shopify. Like, everyone's contributing. It's incredible.
100%.
Skip.tools looks interesting. It looks like very super alpha early days, but still interesting. I'm going to put this in the show notes. The other solution that's becoming a bit popular is this Rust-based solution, which is...
Haven't heard of that.
I've used Capacitor in the past, so you probably also checked out the web-based solutions when you made a decision for React Native 2 years ago. You probably also looked at Flutter. What just quickly going back there, what made you finally go with React Native?
We didn't like it Flutter at all. I hate Flutter.
So you would be good friends with Tio.
It's funny. When I was like very heavy into iOS development, like where that was like my full-time job and not being a founder of a company, I would be like that person on Twitter that would like think React Native is this toy framework and kind of like, oh, these React Native people again. Hold on. I'd be like one of the people on their side. Now I'm like on the opposite side, which is like so funny to me. But I still feel that way with Flutter. The reason is I really don't like their approach of trying to write this like everything from scratch, really, rather than embracing the 20 plus years that Apple has spent developing, or not 20, let's say, and maybe it's close to 20 almost, but 15 years developing UIKit. Like they use this as the core for iOS. This is why people use Apple and have iPhones. Like they've spent so much R&D and development cost into creating this incredible framework. That is run on our iPhones. Why throw that away and just write everything from scratch? Like that just didn't make sense to me. And then like you think of just like the other problems associated with that is you have to learn this new language and this new ecosystem that is not really supported by Google. Like they support Kotlin and Java, and now there's this like another thing, Flutter, and who knows like what else Google will start in the future. So like a lot of these things just didn't add up to me. Not to mention like the accessibility issues that Flutter has. If you've ever tried to use an app that was made in Flutter, sometimes a lot of things are broken. You can't actually like navigate through it with your voice. So that like obviously doesn't help a lot of people using your apps. So that's like my take on Flutter is like I don't think they should like stop developing on it. I think that they should continue innovating, but I don't necessarily see it as a good solution for mobile, maybe for web or something, but.
I mean, to be honest, it sucks even more for the web, so. but anyway, bringing it back to open source. Stop it. Stop it, dog. Gonna have to cut that dog out. Anyway. just want to talk a bit more about the open source packages. There are like three more keywords I want to throw into because I think they're interesting. But before that, I just would love to know, that's interesting. Why are you actually doing all of this open source in the first place? Because you're an early stage startup. It's super hard for you to do all of these things. Are you just generically doing this and then open sourcing it because it feels good to you? Or what's the idea behind it?
Yeah, I was somebody that always, our app is built on open source packages. So I've always felt there's like some responsibility for me to kind of contribute to the ecosystem any way I could. I mentioned to you too, like part of our thesis for Candle is to open up these bank APIs to developers. We think like that the current providers today are like very broken, very expensive. The DX just really sucks for developers. So any way we can kind of foster a community, we've had like a lot of developers come into our Discord or just comment on our GitHub page and stuff like that. So any way we can kind of give back to the community and show that we're like actually like same as you, where we might be starting a company, but we're developers at heart. I feel like it would be a win for us like as a company, but also just like what I think is a big part of myself just internally. And like prior to React Native 2, I had like one, I think, open source package. But I've just always been, I even worked at a company called Raise Labs, like early, that design agency. They had so many open source packages. So this is kind of just something that was kind of ingrained for me, like as I started development professionally.
Yeah, probably like everyone these days getting into technology should just adapt it. And I think it just, yeah, it aligns completely with the vision of Kendall. So it totally makes sense. So I want to throw three words at you. You can pick the order in which we go through them. Push, open AI, and real time. I think you have packages at least on two of them. I'm curious about the third, about real time, if you do have something about it or planned, because you just recently posted about it. So let me hear your thoughts.
So the push stuff, I'd say
why?
it just came back to we used three different libraries for push notifications. I'd say the big thing that even ours like still struggles with is background pushes. So these are pushes that come invisibly to the user with this like special payload that the user doesn't see. And we just could not get that to work for the life of us using all the off-the-shelf solutions that existed today. The one that we did after we updated to the latest version of React Native began crashing. And then the other one, we couldn't really get them consistently to come through. So that kind of led us down that road. Once I released that too, somebody ended up making a PR to implement the Android side. So that was like super interesting. But that is definitely still a work in progress. The OpenAI one, I would say the big draw for that is having the completions stream in real time. So that is like a really cool feature. And today you have to get into like polyfill hell to get that to work in React Native. Mm-hmm. This uses URL session and like the native frameworks that URL session has to support streaming. So if you have your own backend or just use OpenAI directly personally for like a project, I would recommend shipping that to production. You can get like the streaming effect that's very nice in apps like Perplexity or the OpenAI ChatGPT app, for example. So that's like what led us to develop that. We had an interesting feature that we were imagining for finance and like merging AI, generative AI with that a bit. The last one, real time, I didn't really honestly know that was open source, but I think I shared a video about this on my Twitter recently.
Yeah, you just had a video. There's no open source library yet. But I was hoping that you would do something about it.
Yeah, that was just really a proof of concept. I don't know if like that would be a library. That was really just like a socket.io server that I was running locally. I think I was running it with ngGronk, honestly, which actually worked. Surprised. I was just taking the coordinates. So as I was translating the view in the Y position, I was just literally sending that over the socket. And then on the other client, I would take that Y position and automatically move the view that I was touching in like the Y position on that phone. So it's just like an interesting proof of concept. But I think
was it React Native or was it Swift? I didn't get the beginning.
It was React Native. That was React Native.
Oh, I mean, it looked amazing. And of course, you can do a whole lot of things like drawing applications over socket with React Native. I mean, you probably can, but if there was a library to make it life easier, then maybe you can do it.
Maybe add that to the laundry list of things.
You also have this little startup to run, but please focus on the open source stuff. I quickly want to come back to the push notifications, probably out of own interest and because people ask me about this all the time. As you come from iOS and native background, what is possible with background push notifications? So in the case the app is in the background or even if it is completely closed, what is possible with push notifications at that point? What can you actually do? What is allowed by Apple and probably also Google?
Yeah, so the big thing is when the user doesn't give you permission to actually send them visible push notifications, you can still actually communicate with the phone via push notifications. So a lot of iOS developers might not know this. They might think, oh, the only way I can send pushes to the phone is if I have permission. That's not the case. You actually don't need to ask permission at all to do this. But what ends up happening is when you send a special payload property in the push notification to the device, once you register for the token, which is the APNS token that Apple gives you, and save that in your backend or use some kind of service for push, whatever you do, you can actually send this payload to the phone and it wakes it up. Now, like the key to this is that it's not guaranteed to arrive immediately. Apple has a lot of like weirdness around how they've implemented this natively, but it lets you wake up the app and you can call any APIs you want to refresh anything, refresh a session. Kind of, you can imagine just waking up the app and kind of going through its normal flow. The app delegate is called, React Native will be initialized. And then you can kind of go through anything that you want to do in your app. And you have 30 seconds to do it. So that's the big thing.
Would I, as a user, notice this? So let's say I have closed the app from my app switcher, and now a silent push notification comes, which is awaking my app in the background. Would the app be visible in the app switcher for those 30 seconds, or is it really just running like super deep down in the OS?
It's a good question. I've never actually looked at the app switcher to see if it actually comes into memory.
I mean, it kind of should, because it's called. At the same time, it would look really awkward. Like for 30 seconds, it appears there. It's kind of creepy.
Yeah, that's interesting. I have never checked that for the apps for sure thing. But yeah, you have 30 seconds to do whatever you want. It's not guaranteed, and if you abuse it, iOS kind of throttles you. So there's like a lot of like weird quirks about this. But yeah, for example, we use it to refresh your information by calling your bank that you link to our app, for example. So you can imagine you can use it really for any use case that needs to talk to like another API or something internally.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you don't even have to ask that part was interesting. You don't have to ask the user. If I use any of the like Expo React Native packages, I feel like if I request that ID, it will automatically ask the user for permission. Is that the case for those libraries?
And this is like another thing where somebody that is developing this that might not have the context that I do as an iOS developer on how these APIs truly work might believe that is the only way to actually send a push notification to somebody. And this is how a lot of the APIs are made. So they kind of add this constraint to their package, and then you end up having to patch it or go down the path that we did and make our own. But it is very annoying.
Yeah. At this point, honestly, I feel like you should be my go-to consultant for any question regarding iOS. And I feel like every React Native team needs an iOS expert, which is totally against the idea of it. But anyway, is it, by the way, the same for Android? I know you're more like an iOS expert, but for the push notification stuff, do you know what you can do on Android?
It's a good question. We had somebody, like I said, make a PR, and I merged it. I tested it. In the visible case where the app is foregrounded, I didn't necessarily test that use case, but I'll get back to you and see if I can comment in the video or let you know.
Yeah, that's good. By the way, just yesterday I saw someone tweet something funny about like people calling out different monopolies and Apple is bad and stuff. And then they say, do you know we have to sign up? Like that was the AppRite team. Now I remember it. Do you know we have to tell our customers they have to sign up for the competitor Firebase to get a Firebase like push notification token if you want to send push? Yeah, let's talk again about monopolies.
Seriously, I think like that's like the only way to do it on Android. Like it's like such a meme.
it's a joke, honestly. Yeah. But I highly recommend, so if this wasn't clear to people from there's a push package at Kendall Finance, and there's also an OpenAI package, which I, by the way, think I'm going to use because I'm working on a ChatGPT clone, and I think this comes in really handy. I just wonder if I want to do the streaming, like I want to have the OpenAI interaction in my API routes with Expo, if I can stream to the app. That's going to be interesting. Maybe you're going to see a PR or some issues.
The cool thing is if you know Vercel a bit, and I know they have like a lot of projects where they kind of have the scaffolding to create a backend that just streams data for you, that kind of just plugs directly in. So you don't need to necessarily hard code API keys. You can use an external API as well. But yeah, it was kind of something, AI is kind of like the hot new thing. If you're not like an AI right now, you're kind of behind. It's this new technology that we're all kind of learning, kind of like Swift back in 2014.
Yeah.
We're all kind of starting as developers creating applications on top of these like incredible models that seem like magic. We're all kind of learning it. So there's definitely a lot of, opportunity on mobile even. And now like this package, hopefully, helps some React Native developers and us build up in that space.
It will definitely help me, yeah. So we're going to have to wrap it up soon. I would just love to end this with, because you've been involved in the whole process, you've shared a lot about the technologies. Is there one thing that stands out from this application that was like the most challenging part in terms of the front end, not speaking about the back end, but like the thing, if you think about the development of Kendall, you still remember those evenings when you had to face this problem with React Native?
Yeah, I'd say what makes our app like truly different and what people like kind of say, oh, you're doing that. And what's been really difficult is a lot of the way that we connect to your bank happens client side, actually. There's actually no server involved. This is like for a privacy reason, but also the fastest way to actually talk to a bank and get information about your balances or call an endpoint to buy a stock or something. It all happens on device. And traditionally, you would implement all of this on a server. You might be familiar with a company called Plaid, which allows mm-hmm. you to interface with banks. Yeah. Like I mentioned earlier in an episode, we did this ourselves, and we took this architecture and put it on the client. So the client talks directly to the bank, and it all happens like super securely right on your device. Apple also released a framework recently called Finance Kit, which has the same architecture. It all runs locally on your device. So I think this could be a trend in the future, honestly. From a privacy point of view, Apple always harps on keeping your phone private, and everything private happens on your device. So we've kind of like gone down that trend. So what that makes us do is run a lot of our algorithms, like for our graphs, for example, or our home screen, or that shows your net worth, for example, or how much money you've invested. All these little things, they take a little bit of time to process. So kind of balancing the performance aspect of it and keeping like a really like fast and nice looking app has been really challenging. Honestly, we still struggle on it. There's still like a lot of rough edges, but I'd say like that kind of keeps me up at night. Like how can we make that more faster, more performant? Sometimes we have to make hundreds of API calls to your bank, for example, in like a split of 10 seconds. I'd say hundreds. If you open up Robinhood actually, which is like a really big bank and brokerage in the US, they make over 300, 400, 500 requests within the span of 10 seconds. So this is a very common thing with banking APIs. You might need to retrieve a lot of stock information to show the most up-to-date quote. You might need to retrieve the up-to-date balances. You might need to retrieve your entire order history to compute a complex algorithm, because you want to show somebody a graph about the history of their stock and when they purchased it and how that stock's historicals have gone up and down. So all these complex visuals that we want to show you in graphs can sometimes like hinder at the performance of the app. So that's like a big thing that really keeps me up at night and really something that hopefully we solve with React Native. But yeah, that's like the hardest thing outside.
Making 300 calls in 10 seconds, this totally doesn't sound like it's a good way. And I feel like people should innovate in that as well. And like, I don't know, open another middle layer to simplify this. I don't know how, but... this is super interesting.
It's a trade-off. Like normally this would happen on a back end and ahead of time or maybe on a cron job, but because we decided to have this client-side architecture and keep everything on device, we kind of do it on device.
Yeah. I mean, this is super interesting, and I think people in the United States should check it out. For everyone else, you can also go to kendall.fi. And maybe if this episode goes live, you can download it in your country. I even like the page. It's really smooth. You got this nice header animation going on. The page is probably not done with React Native, although you could do this today. But people should also check out all the packages, because I think there are like a few hidden gems in there. I mean, the Kendall Finance organization, people might not know about it, but there's some really cool packages, and hopefully if you can take this away from this podcast, then go check this out. Gary, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're a business, a busy startup founder, so thanks for explaining all of this. Is there any other place that people check out if they want to learn more about you and what you do?
I think you got it. I'm on X or Twitter, formerly Twitter, also, and I sometimes tweet out cool things that I'm working on. But you covered it.
I can definitely vote for this. Your tweets got me because you had cool examples in there. So everyone who's also interested a tiny bit, at least in design, but also in functionality, go check it out. Going to put the links in the show notes. And of course, if you want to learn more about React Native, check out galaxies.dev. You're going to find tons of courses. So thank you, Gary, and all the best for Kendall Finances. And I hope to talk again with you in the future when the next big library, maybe Kit, comes out.
Amazing. It's good to be there.
Awesome. Bye.